My name is Jay Norton. I'm not Amber Mason. Amber Mason's a grad student who couldn't make it today. I'm going to talk about a completely different ecosystem, but we have some of the same issues. I'm not talking about spatial variability, but the sagebrush steppe is an island of fertility type ecosystem. And when they get done reclaiming these well pad sites, they're completely uniform. So, you know, we'd like to get a handle on that, the redevelopment of that spatial variability as well, but that's too many samples for me to take right now. So what we looked at was pre-disturbance through the stockpiling phase of these topsoils, and then right after reclamation. That's the part of this process I'm going to talk about. And this is a typical reclaimed well pad on the Wamsutter, Wyoming oil field. This is a Gardner saltbush plant community. Very low rainfall, very high wind, cold, dry environment. And this is what we call interim reclamation, where this well is in production for maybe 30 to 50 years. But they've reclaimed most of the area where the drilling equipment was. They'll come in and make a level pad, and then they remove all that. They re-spread the topsoil and plant it to a native species mix. And these well pads will be upwards of 16 wells per square mile in some of these areas. So there's thousands of pads on the three areas where we worked. And there's a pretty high rate of unsuccessful reclamation where they have to come back and do it over for one reason or another. We want to try to get a handle on that by looking at soil processes. We want to quantify the effects of the stripping, this first phase of reclamation, this first year basically. And then also there's a lot of questions about how deep should we pile the topsoil. We wanted to look into that, and we wanted to look at three different climates in Wyoming. They're all dry, but they're somewhat different. This picture here shows, this is last week on the Pinedale Anticline. This is the Wind River Range in the background. This scraper is, they use the same thing to scrape the topsoil off the site, put it in a pile like this. And then they come back when they're done drilling, and they use the same kind of scraper to pick up the topsoil and spread it back on the site. And so the topsoil is pretty well pulverized and then spread at a very uniform depth, just like Derek was talking about. We looked at three sites. The Pinedale is the wettest one. The Jonah Field is the driest. While the Jonah and the Wamsutter are the same, the Wamsutter is more saline with the Gardner saltbush plant communities. And this is where they are. This is the Pinedale Anticline up here with the Wind River Range, and the Jonah Field nearby there, and then in south central Wyoming, the Wamsutter gas field. We got as deep as we could. Turned out to be about 2 meters into these stockpiles. You can see these are pretty big stockpiles. We sampled the stockpiles three times, and I'm presenting averages over that period, five depth increments. And then after respreading, we sampled. So all the soil is like 0 to 20 centimeters depth, whether it's, you know, 3 meters deep in a stockpile or on the ground. So we sampled this 0 to 20 centimeter depth in undisturbed, and then the reclaimed sites. And this represents kind of a pad and an undisturbed site and a reclaimed site. And then we had three of those at each of the locations. So what I'm presenting here is mineral nitrogen and the potentially mineralizable nitrogen that we measured. And moisture content. In the That depth effects of the stockpiles, this little thing here represents a 0 to 20 centimeter depth in the undisturbed. So you can see the moisture content stayed pretty constant except for right near the surface in the stockpiles. That's pretty, you know, not too unexpected. This, again, these little dots here represent the 0 to 20 centimeter depth in the undisturbed site. So we had a pretty big jump in mineral nitrogen. This is ammonium and nitrate, and then the total of the two. But it stays pretty constant with depth. The potentially mineralizable nitrogen climbs with depth. It looks like, you know, it was mineralized here where it stays moist, but has access to oxygen near the surface, and then but maybe was kind of protected in this dry refrigerated stockpile, basically. It's a dry ecosystem again, so and they scrape it when it's dry, and moisture doesn't penetrate very far. So, you know, we're kind of thinking that we want to look into this some more, but maybe stockpile depth, maybe deeper is good. Maybe it's preserving this pool of labile organic nitrogen that's kind of released during that disturbance. So the three sites acted pretty similar across the different soils and climatic areas in Wyoming. This green line is the Pinedale site, and we found out later that, well, this stockpile had been moved three times. So I think that's why we got some mixing instead of that sort of general trend of more organic nitrogen with depth. The Pinedale site, they actually do a lot of directional drilling. So they'll have maybe a 20-acre pad with up to 50 wells on it, where the wells actually go down and they can go almost a mile. So you end up with a lot smaller footprint, but a longer-term disturbance where they'll be moving those stockpiles around. And, where on the other two, they generally do one well per pad, vertical wells, and you end up with a lot of pipelines and roads and a lot of disturbance. So overall effects, it looks like, compared to the undisturbed, we got a big release of labile organic material in the stockpile. So we think, you know, that pulverizing twice during the stripping and then during the respreading probably released a lot of labile organic matter from soil structure that was basically, you know, squashed during that process. But then it was sort of preserved within the stockpile for that period over the whole summer when it was in the stockpile, until they respread it at 20 centimeters depth. And then we got a large release of mineral nitrogen on the order of, you know, 50 kilograms per hectare. And this explains some of the failure of reclamation due to weeds. Weeds can be a tremendous issue. And so, you know, they're opportunistically taking up this big pulse of mineral nitrogen, we think. A lot of reclamationists, you know, kind of like weeds, like tumbleweeds and lamb's quarters and halogeton. They provide kind of a cover crop, but they're not the most ideal cover crop, especially tumbleweeds, because you don't preserve the nitrogen on the side, it rolls away. So just to recap then, this topsoil stripping and stockpiling phase increases the labile pool by destroying the soil structure, but then that labile land is protected until it's respread, and then it seems to mineralize pretty rapidly, and that mineral land then is really vulnerable to loss from the site with weeds or other routes. The soils, we saw that same effect at all three sites, and we're going to do more analysis to get a better handle. We're doing more analysis, and we've done it, but we haven't analyzed it all yet statistically. So We're continuing to monitor these sites, and right now we've got 3 years of data on this recovery process that I hope to present next year. And we're also looking at some projects using cover crops and carbon-rich soil amendments to try to capture that pulse of nitrogen and make a more favorable environment for the native plants than for these opportunistic weeds. And this is another treatment we're doing that another grad student is working on, trying to evaluate the idea that controlled livestock impact can be a useful tool for reclamation. So, are there any questions? Yes? Well, in the ideal situation, they're there for like a summer season. They'll a year, I guess. They'll strip in the fall or the spring and stockpile it, and then they'll drill the well over that summer, and then they'll respread it and seed it in the fall. They usually do a dormant fall seeding on these sites. These more complicated, large pads with the directional drilling, they might be there a lot longer. And then, you know, in coal mines, for instance, they might be there for 20 years. But there's not a lot of... That's another question, you know. Is there a threshold when the soil is dead after you leave it in a stockpile for too long? And we'd like to look into that. There's not very consistent data that says that, you know, there's a period that's too long, although... There's rules of thumb that say you can't do it for over 5 years, but that's just somebody's guess, I think. I think, you know, it's not going to... Once it has access to moisture and oxygen, the microbial community is going to recover, and I don't see that stockpiling for a long period of time is going to have a lot of detrimental impacts, but we'd like to look into that some more. Yes?
Jay, can I ask, did you come up with an optimal depth for those stockpiles in those areas?
Well, no, but there's another, you know, as you know, there's sort of a rule of thumb, like a meter or 4 feet so that plant roots can get in there. But doing that, you're vastly increasing the footprint of those stockpiles. Mm-hmm. And from what we saw, making them deeper, I don't think is detrimental. It actually might help conserve that highly decomposable organic material until you spread it out, and then it's going to mineralize if you don't somehow immobilize it or use, you know, beneficial cover crops or something to take it out. Yes, one more question.
I was just wondering, did you notice any trends with changes in soil textures, or you losing more head in your sandier textures or clay textures?
Oh, that's a good question. We haven't we have soil texture data on this, but we haven't got as far as really picking that apart. Although these sites were all fairly sandy in that upper layers, so I don't know if we'll get a good handle on texture impacts or not. Although this saline Wamsutter site will be finer, so that'll be interesting. Okay, thanks very much.